हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 147, chapter 28, Jnana Yoga. Okay, Sri Krishna continued. Nevertheless, until by firmly practicing devotional service to me, one has completely eliminated from his mind all contamination of material passion, one must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes, which are produced by my illusory energy. Just as an improperly treated disease reoccurs and gives repeated distress to the patient, the mind that is not completely purified of its perverted tendencies will remain attached to material things and repeatedly torment the imperfect yogi. So one has to be aware is that one's taking up the process of devotional service. That means giving up the idea of sense gratification. So the mind, though, is conditioned to, is used to this. Yes. So the mind will keep going back there.
Yes.
Right? Once one has come to the perfect, yogi, then that won't happen. But until that happens, the mind tends to go back. So one has to not associate with this. The mind goes there, but one doesn't associate with that.
Yes.
Comes up, but one's not interested. You just let it go. Does that make sense? Just because the mind brings it up doesn't mean it's something to do.
Yes.
Just like children, they'll bring up a million things you should do. But it's not necessarily that any of them are actual options. Right? It's time to go to school. No, but do we have to go to school today? Or isn't this more important? And you said, I should, clean my room. I could do that. So like that. That's the mind. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, "The unperfected jnani should not act as he pleases like a liberated person. This is expressed in two verses. Attraction, rajaha, for sense objects should be eliminated." The BBT purport states, the word tatapi in verse 27 indicates that even though the material nature is non-different from the Supreme Lord, as elaborately described in this chapter, one who has yet to conquer material desire should not artificially associate with material things. Right? Because they're seeing it connected to Krishna. So they're only associating with Krishna. And they'll only deal with those things that they have duties connected with. Right? They won't deal with all aspects. You could say, no, but they could do anything. But that's, what is that, how is that personal? Mother Yashoda, she could do anything. So is she going to be out there playing leapfrog with the cowherd boys and Krishna? No, she's not going to do that. Is that? Does that make sense? So it's that's the whole thing, is you have your area of your service, and you stick to that. So Varnashram, one being a structure to create that environment in general, but for the conditioned soul, then it gives them something to do. Right? You have a particular situation you're in, a particular body, particular facilities, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, like this. And so that's then what you engage. According to that, then everybody can fit in. Right? So in the spiritual world, it's the same. So spontaneous is not whimsical. Right? A neophyte devotee who presumes himself liberated is impelled by the mode of passion to become falsely proud of his position. And thus he neglects the actual process of devotional service to the Lord. Right? Because we get involved in the secondary aspects. Right? Because that's what we're used to. So then we're going to naturally be involved in that. So that's going to be the problem. Is that even though it's devotional service, It's engaging the senses in the Lord's service, but we get more absorbed in the effect, the senses and their effects, rather than the service itself, to please Krishna. Does that make sense? We always have to be very careful of that. So the secondary is the form through which you're going to apply it. But we always have to be careful that it's about Krishna, not about the secondary form. Sri Krishna continued, "Sometimes the progress of imperfect transcendentalists is checked by attachment to family members, disciples, or others who are sent by envious demigods for that purpose." So now you have someone to blame. Right? Finally, right? It's been going through, it's not the karma, it's not the this, it's not the that. But we do have before, it's not the demigods either. Because it's due to our attachment. Because if they send and you're not attached, like how did it work out with Markandeya? Right? Markandeya is there. He's unattached. They send, they bring in all the big girls. They bring in all, you know, springtime is there. Because we saw with what's his name? Vishwamitra. They just sent Menaka. Right? But with Markandeya, they sent a whole crew. Right? Because they weren't confident that the girls were going to be enough. So they send in the springtime and the breeze and and Cupid's there with his arrows. And the whole thing is all happening. And then when they find out, they're all there ready and everything, and it's all happening, and Cupid's there ready with his arrow, and nothing's going on and all that. Then they start to get worried, and they say, uh-oh, we better get out of here. Like, you know. Yeah, because Cupid knows what happened. It's a known scenario what happened to Cupid when he tried that with Shiva. Right? And still to this day he doesn't have a body, right? Because of that. So yeah.
What happened with Markandeya?
The story is unknown. It means nothing happened. He just sat there and was unaffected by it, so then they all had to surrender to him and offer prayers and say they're sorry. Sorry?
12th canto of Markandeya story.
12th canto is coming up. Stay tuned. How do you say? Stay tuned for the
future event.
The future present event. Yes. But on the strength of their accumulated advancement, means what their devotional service has already been there, such imperfect transcendentalists will resume their practice of yoga in the next life. So they get deviated by this. Whatever is there accumulating devotional service, they'll take that up in next life. They will never again be trapped in the network of fruitive work, right? Because they're always moving forward. They've gotten distracted, but the karmis, if they get, they just go down that path. You know, it moves a little bit, gives a variety, therefore the 8,400,000. But for the devotee, it won't happen. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "The yogis who are obstructed by friends or disciples, inspired by the devatas, not by their absorption and enjoyment, resume their practice in the next life." However, Bhagavatam makes the following statement. Members of the renounced order who fail to uproot the last traces of material desire in their hearts remain impure, and thus you do not allow them to understand you, although you are present within their hearts. For them, you are like a jewel worn around the neck of a person who has totally forgotten it is there. O Lord, those who practice yoga only for sense gratification must suffer punishment both in this life and the next, from death, who will not release them, and from you, whose kingdom they cannot reach. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-39. Such sannyasis are different from the yogis mentioned in the present verse, right? Because we're talking about just the big jnanis, the big renunciates. Because you always notice Krishna is always talking about the jnanis and the devotees, the pure devotees, because they're both on the transcendental platform. But because the sannyasis on this, the jnanis, they haven't come to that platform. That's why they're called sannyasis. Right? If they were devotees, you call them devotees. Like the Avanti Pur Brahman, we're talking about a devotee. Right? Is that, yeah. Shruti says the devatas are not pleased that men know Brahman. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10. Right? So then they send obstacles. They inspire, you know, how you say, family and friends. Right? What's this
said? Friends.
Friends are disciples. Yeah. And Krishna mentions family members, disciples, or others. Right? Others are friends. Right? Yeah.
But it is sent by India's demigod.
Yes. Because they don't like that they know Brahman. Because then, see, as if they do the big things, then you know it's going to take them a long time. Like to do 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas, it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
But by devotional service, in a moment, they could come up to the same position or even higher. That's one thing. And then the other thing is that being neophytes, they have a tendency to not necessarily appreciate those who are more advanced.
Yes.
You see, when push comes to shove, that's when they appreciate. Right? Does that make sense?
Just before the curtain goes. We're talking about the pujaris.
Oh, okay, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, so they don't... Yeah.
Also, Vedanta Sutra mentions that when the jivas, they go to Swargaloka, then the demigods are extremely happy because now these jivas are going to work as servants for them.
Oh, okay, because so those who go there, they'll work. Okay, no, that's a good point. No one ever brought that up before. Ooh. Oh, Vedanta Sutra brings that up. Yeah, because the Karma Shastras won't bring that up. You heard? Means that Vedanta Sutra is explaining that when they go to the heavenly planets, the jiva, you know, they do their piety and go there, then the demigods are happy. Why? Because then they become servants of them. Right, because Indra's there, and the big, you know, the heads of the planets and all that. The others who come there, they're like the tourists. You know, they does that make sense? There's only, if you do 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas, you become Indra. But most people are just nice guys. So they just go up, and they're that third level. Right? Does that make sense? Because the devatas who live there, the residents or the citizens, they get nice all the facilities, but they're servants of those who are above them. You know, the ones, the Dikpalas and those actually who control things. And then above them is Indra, is the king. So that's an interesting point, is when you go to the heavenly planets, you'll still be a servant. Maybe in a better facility.
Still staying on rent.
Sorry?
Still staying on rented homes.
Yes, yes, yes. Still staying on rent. Yeah, because you'll go and they'll still be there. Sri Krishna continued, an ordinary living entity performs material work and is transformed by the reactions to such work. But one is not feeling bad towards the demigod, because the point is that it's because of our attachment that reaction is there. We have no attachment, it will have no effect. Sri Krishna continued, an ordinary living entity performs material work and is transformed by the reaction to such work. Thus he is driven by various desires to continue working fruitively up to the very moment of his death. Like, so the activity is there, it makes results. Then that transforms the living entity. Their desire for that, their interest in that, they're willing to work for that. Sentient. Yeah. A wise person, however, having experienced his own constitutional bliss, gives up all material desires that does not engage in fruit of work, right? The constitutional means the taste in Krishna consciousness. Once that's been tasted, it says the wise person, you taste that, then you decide, okay, this is the main thing, not the other things. You may engage, but it's actually, this is the main. Because these other things, they transform, they'll give some taste, but it's not, it's inferior, because it's material, it's temporary. While the spiritual is eternal. So... The wise man, whose consciousness is fixed in the self, does not even notice his own bodily activities. While standing, sitting, walking, lying down, urinating, eating, or performing other bodily functions, he understands that the body is acting according to its own nature. 58. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Does this go against our philosophy in the morning that the soul has to be active to be an entity? Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Bhagavad Gita 5:8-9. Yes? Okay. Although a self-realized soul may sometimes see an impure object or activity, he does not accept it as real. By logically understanding impure sense objects to be based on illusory material duality, the intelligent person sees them to be contrary to and distinct from reality. Right? Because it's Krishna. So how things are supposed to be going on is in connection with Krishna. And so these things are going on not connected to Krishna, so they're illusion. They may exist, but they're illusion. Right? It's not that an illusion can't exist. You know, like they say the magician does a trick. It creates the illusion, but it exists as trick. It may not be as we think it is, but that's the whole point of sense gratification. It's never the way you think it is.
That's why it has that name.
Yes. In the same way that a man awakening from sleep views his fading dreams. Right? They're not real. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. If someone, when breaking samadhi, he sees material sense objects, he makes them false by thinking that the effect is not different from the cause. Just as cloth is not different from its threads, the wise man does not consider anything except Atma to be real. Just as, waking from a dream, a person does not consider the dream objects which appeared by impressions to be real, since those objects disappear on their own. Right? So if you don't think of them as, you understand they're a dream, they just disappear. You know, if you try to make them real, then you can get distracted, because daydreaming can also be part of it. It's all controlled by passion. Right? Sri Krishna continued, material nescience, which expands into many varieties by the activities of the modes of nature, is wrongly accepted by the conditioned soul to be identical with the self. But through the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, my dear Uddhava, this same nescience fades away at the time of liberation. The eternal self, on the other hand, is never assumed and never abandoned. When the sun rises, it destroys the darkness covering men's eyes, but it does not create the objects they then see before them. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that self-realization, now the soul is there. The soul has always been there. It's not that Krishna now manifests. He's always been there. Right? Okay. When the sun rises, it destroys the darkness covering men's eyes, but does not create the objects they see, they then see before them, which in fact were existing all along. Similarly, potent and factual realization of me will destroy the darkness covering a person's true consciousness. The Supreme Lord is self-luminous, unborn and immeasurable. So it's interesting how Krishna says, when they think of me, and then he says, the Supreme Lord is self-luminous, and he talks about himself in the first verse and in the third, because he is all. That's the thing, being so it's interesting how he does that. Now and again, he's talking about super soul, say, remembering him.
Yeah.
But here you see he uses both.
I mean, because he doesn't identify as that, right? He identifies as a person, as a Krishna.
Yeah.
These are jobs or functions.
Yeah, but it's still him who's doing them.
Yeah.
It's still him doing, but point is why Paramatma is localized, because he as a person only has to manifest that much to deal as the witness with the living entity. He doesn't have to bring all his friends and everything and hang out. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, why would you want to bring all your friends if you're going to be a super soul in a worm and stool? You know, so it's not
better than that.
Yeah, so therefore then, as Bhagavan, that's how he does. So when the devotee sees him as Bhagavan, then you see, then it works. Okay. The Supreme Lord is self-luminous, unborn, and immeasurable. He is pure transcendental consciousness and perceives everything. One without a second, he is realized only after ordinary words cease. By him, the power of speech and the life airs are set into motion. Right, so you can only he puts it into motion, but until you give up the material concept, then you don't get realization.
You saw in the morning in Vedanta Sutras about the words. So it seems, yes, words.
Whatever apparent duality is perceived in the self is simply the confusion of the mind. Indeed, such supposed duality has no basis to rest upon apart from one's own soul. Right? Because we identify with it, so that's where the illusion is resting. Maya's there, that's her potency. She makes all these things, arranges these things. But the soul is the, you could say, the shelter of this of attachment, the mundane perspective. Therefore, they function. When the soul is no longer the shelter for that, but only shelter for service to Krishna, then Maya doesn't act anymore. It's simple. So, yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though there is only one Atma, distinction arises. One's bewilderment has no basis other than the Jiva himself. The Jiva perceives separateness by his ignorance. The Jiva, though different from Paramatma, is an effect of Paramatma, and thus is one with Paramatma. Shruti says, Neha nanasti kinchana. There is no duality in this world at all. Be it Aranyaka Upanishad 4:4:19. He says it doesn't exist. We're all connected to Krishna. So there isn't anything other than Krishna. So there isn't any duality. It means we've come from Krishna, material energies from Krishna, devotional services from Krishna, right? The spiritual world. So there isn't any duality. Right? It's all Krishna. At the same time, it's unique. It's different. But there's no duality. So when one gives that up, then there's one is transcendental. But as long as one thinks there is duality, then one is one is the shelter of that illusion. Right? So it's not forced upon us. Because right? The whole thing, it's that we accept it. That's why it acts. Because otherwise we see the demigods also, they try to harass, the devotees. It doesn't have an effect. So that was what was pointed out by the Avantipur Brahman, is that it's our attachments that then there are six different mediums through which the results of our attachments can be experienced, right? Through the karma, through the demigods, through the planets, through other living entities, through the like this, all these kind of aspects. But that's only because we're willing to be affected.
Yes.
Does that make sense? But if we're not willing to be affected, then we won't be. If we're absorbed in Krishna, we won't be. Right? So the transcendentalists, those who aren't willing to be affected but not absorbed in Krishna, it'll be much more difficult. Yes. They're elevated, they're glorious, but the point is that situation is not very stable. But if they're in that position because of absorption in Krishna, then you see that's the stable, that's the eternal position. So they're both on the eternal platform, but the devotee is eternally situated in this eternal platform. Well, the other one may, if they come forward to devotional service, they'll be there, and if not, they'll go back to the material world.
Yes.
Or from our perspective, they'll come back to the material world. Because we're looking at it from
back,
there, from the computer. Yeah, they'll go back home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you? Oh, I'm here. Yes. Sri Krishna continued, the duality of the five material elements is perceived. Didn't we just do this? No.
We did not.
Okay, no, as you mentioned before. Perceived only in terms of names and forms. Those who say this duality is real are pseudo-scholars, vainly proposing fanciful theories without basis in facts. Right? They'll try to say, this is real, all these things are real, you know, where the jivas come from, the material energy, all these experiences. Mm-hmm. But these are not, so he says, pseudo scholars. They're not actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so they don't actually understand. Like that. At the same time, those that say it's all illusion also don't understand. Like that. Because there's still the aspect of duality. Because they'll say there's God, or there's Brahman, and there's illusion. So there's duality again. Right. Okay. Those who say this duality is real are pseudo scholars vainly proposing fanciful theories without basis in fact. Shri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The effect and cause are one, just as threads and cloth are one. The difference of the effects is thus annulled. Those who consider the variety of effects to be existent, not annulled, abadhitam, are learned in name only. They are not learned. The existence of the five gross elements, perceived by the senses to have name and form, are perceived because of duality, which has not yet been annulled. Those who propose themselves to be learned accept these elements. The wise do not. Since this is a claim of real objects without... This is a claim of real objects without real objects. Because Krishna is the real object. An object with beginning and end cannot be accepted as real. So that's the point where we're saying it's asat. We're saying it's existing there, but the point is it's temporary, and the soul is eternal, Krishna is eternal. So then you can't accept it as sat, eternal. Right? We're not saying it doesn't exist there. So when we say non-existence, we mean non-eternal. The effect, yeah. Right? Devotional things give, you're dealing with the material energy using Krishna's service, it gives an eternal effect. That's what Krishna said before. Even the devotee gets distracted, it's still what devotional service is there will continue in the next life. You know, it's not going to go away. But everything else, that being temporary, that will go away. Right? So that's why in devotional service you're engaging Krishna's energy in the Lord's service. It gives an eternal effect. Therefore it's sat. Only because it's connected to Krishna. And its thing itself is not sat. It's temporary. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, like the body. It's temporary, but we use it in Krishna's service and develop eternal benefits. But we never say the body therefore is eternal. So, yeah. By direct perception, logical deduction, scriptural testimony, and personal realization, one should know that this world has a beginning and an end, and so is merely temporary. Thus, one should live in this world without attachment. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28-9. That's fun. Quoting from within the chapter, another verse within the chapter. I like how the acharyas do this. Have you even seen? We'll see more in Jiva Goswami, where he'll be giving one explanation, but it has different parts. And he'll quote the same verse in each part to establish the different parts. You know, not that, oh, he's already said this. No. Yeah.
He goes through the same verse.
Yeah, man.
They have no duality.
Yes, no duality. So, because it's Krishna, so there's unlimited aspects. Sri Krishna continued, the physical body of the endeavoring yogi, who is not yet mature in his practice, may sometimes be overcome by various disturbances. Therefore, the following process is recommended. Some of these obstructions may be counteracted by yogic meditation or by sitting postures, practice together with concentration on controlled breathing, and others may be counteracted by special austerities, mantras, or medicinal herbs. These inauspicious disturbances can be gradually removed by constant remembrance of me. So that's the point. By congregational hearing and chanting of my holy names, or by following the footsteps of the great masters of yoga. Right? So that's actually how you get. You may sometimes use these other technical points like that if they're giving an effect, but we have to understand it's the main thing is by hearing and chanting about Krishna and the association of devotees. That's what's actually going to affect it. The others may be useful. Mind is distracted, you do some technical point, you know, do the breathing exercise to control the mind, that's fine, as long as you bring it to Krishna. But she never thinks it's the pranayama. That's what's making it work. Mm. Right? Because it's remembering Krishna is what makes it work. Does that make sense? Yeah. By various methods, some yogis free the body from disease and old age and keep it perpetually youthful. Thus, they engage in yoga for the purpose of achieving material mystic perfections. That's the point, is that, no, it's about engaging in Krishna's service, not about keeping it perpetually young.
Mm, yes.
So a service can go on, and that works nice. It's not about other things. This mystic bodily perfection is not valued very highly by those expert in transcendental knowledge. Indeed, they consider endeavor for such perfection useless, since the soul, like a tree, is permanent, but the body, like a tree's fruit, is subject to destruction. Although the physical body may be improved by various processes of yoga, an intelligent person who has dedicated his life to me does not place his faith in the prospect of perfecting his physical body through yoga. And in fact, he gives up such procedures. It's not there. So unless it has some benefit to bring you to Krishna consciousness, some supporting Krishna consciousness, then only are these yogic practices given. That's why for us, what Prabhupada and the Acharyas give are those direct activities that directly support. And then others, according to the conditioning, you can add as long as they're useful in Krishna consciousness. But if we think that, oh no, but if I'm healthy, then this and that, those, no, it's if you're absorbed in Krishna, that's what's going to be the perfection. So only if it helps there. Right? But that means the process should be helping. Right? Because otherwise, if we go about a health regime not thinking of Krishna, why would we think when we become healthy, we will think about Krishna? Yeah, it won't happen. And the fun part is, you'll never become healthy. Right? Not that there's not an improvement in what you consider health. It's just whatever position you're in, you'll always want more. Right? If you think, oh, if I do a little exercise, it's good, then you'll do more. You know what I'm saying? The yoga is there, it produces good. Oh, that's great, we have more. But what about bhakti? Then we get distracted by whatever mode that we're performing our, you know, health program with.
Like that. So we think the secondary to be primary.
We take the secondary as primary, yes. The yogi who has taken shelter of me remains free from hankering because he experiences the happiness of the soul within. Thus, while executing this process of yoga, he is never defeated by obstacles. Footnote 59. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Bhagavad Gita 6:47. The BBT purport states, right? So, what's connected to Krishna, that's the highest yoga. These other things, if they are supportive, great. But if not, then what's the point? BBT purport states, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Supreme Lord has briefly described to Uddhava the essential wisdom of all the Upanishads, with the conclusion that pure devotional service to the Lord is the real means of ultimate liberation. In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasizes that although Hatha Yogis and Raja Yogis try to make progress along the prescribed paths, they confront obstacles and often fail to achieve their desired goals. However, one who surrenders to the Supreme Lord will certainly be victorious on the spiritual path back home, back to Godhead. Right? Because Krishna is actually controlling everything. But if we think that the yoga itself will give them, you know, tangible results, that's where they fail. Because why is one's doing the yoga? To become happy in some way. Either with better health, mystic cities, liberation, you know, just it's the social thing to do because you can do the asana better than everybody else, so someone's going to mention, ooh, like that. Or your leotards are better than their leotards, you know, something. Or even though they're the same, the color you got is better than their one, you know, something. Or even that, they've got that, but your mat is better, you know, something's better. If nothing else, than when you go downstairs and throw your mat into the back of the car, yours is a BMW and theirs is not. You know, in some way, you're better. So that kind of thing is not going to actually benefit the soul. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, probably better it was a Bentley, because there's probably quite a few BMWs there.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
No?
Yeah.
Yep, true. I think so.
It's true.
Or even better, the chauffeur throws the yoga mat into the trunk while you just, you know, yeah, sit around and play with your phone until it's time to get in the car, after they open the door.
In Mayfair with a Bentley, that's a realistic,
yeah,
it's a realistic scenario.
Yeah, so, that's what do you mean, realistic? That's real.
Standard.
that's what the yogis are talking about. We're talking about real here. But that's the pseudo-scholars by what Krishna said. Yes. Right, so those who surrender to Krishna, that'll surely be victorious, because it's not about the external. Even you improve the external, the living entity being come transformed by that external, that's the distraction, that's the problem. Right. Conclusion. One should see everything in connection to God, and thus avoid false identification with matter. Right? That's the whole point. Because as soon as we identify, then we're caught up in that cycle of all this action and reaction and enjoyment and suffering. But as soon as we give up that false identification and see yourself as a servant of Krishna, that's then when everything corrects itself.
Yes.
Because yeah, Krishna is in control.
Yes.
But,
and there is no duality.
There's no duality. When it was properly understood, the process of becoming firmly fixed in knowledge does not indulge in material criticism or praise. One should know that this world has a beginning and an end, and so is not the ultimate reality. Thus, one should live in this world without attachment. Right? So it's not the ultimate reality. It's real, it means it exists, but the ultimate means eternal. Therefore, the non-ultimate reality then is called temporary, or, you know, which it is, or unreal.
When we say material criticism or praise.
Material criticism, yes. Means, but what are you pointing out? If there, let's say, you know, if we're saying no, but there's proper criticism. What is that proper criticism?
Anything that would bring the situation closer to Krishna, something pleasing to Krishna.
Yes.
A guru correcting a disciple.
Yes. But the point is that is in line with advancement in devotional understanding practice.
Always look at it from that perspective.
That's the only thing. Because these others, it's let's say, wrong, but are we bringing out the correct point?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Somebody's being, interested in material moralism. And so they're saying people aren't behaving in a moralistic way. And so then that's wrong that they see like that. But unless we're bringing out how that affects Krishna consciousness, then it's criticism, even though it's correct. Because right and wrong doesn't mean right and wrong don't exist, but bringing out right and wrong, unless it's beneficial devotional service, is not actually good.
So we're talking about you're not the body earlier.
That's yes.
Like, then what? What are you going to do with that?
So yeah, it just means, how is it devotional service? So pointing out, it's not service, it becomes political.
Yeah.
But the point is to be engaged in service. So if you want to, like that, then how we're not the body, we're servant of Krishna, we engage in that. If we're not that, then the body being the body, we'll look at the body and what body we have, what services available, then engage it accordingly. You know, does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, if you have somebody who's a good cook, they go into the kitchen, and they want to, you know, they're thinking to cook something, but then the point is you can only cook what's there with what's there, right? So if all there is potatoes and a frying pan, that's what you do. You don't say, I'm not this frying pan, and then, you know, you're going to, you know, bake something. No, it's not going to happen. You know, is that what it says? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is one is just naturally functioning with what's there. But you have to bring it to the point of seeing how that mentality is not useful in Krishna consciousness. Is that... One who has properly understood the process of becoming firmly fixed in knowledge does not indulge in material criticism or praise, right? So it says material. One should know that this world has a beginning and an end, and so is not the ultimate reality. Thus one should live in this world without attachment. Actually, the living entity is transcendental to material existence. But, because of his mentality of lording it over material nature, his material existential condition does not cease. And, just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. Oh, and just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. Right? You don't know how long the sentence is going to go. So. The living entity who falsely identifies with his body, senses, life, air, and mind, and who dwells within these coverings, assumes the form of his own material condition, qualities, and works. Right, so the soul takes on that form. Right, I am this. Right, so he mentions all these things. The body, then that's natural there. The senses, like how good your senses are at something. You know, the life air, like how much energy you have, how much, you know, stamina, all these different kinds of things. The mind, and what you can think, what you can imagine, like this. So when one dwells within these, then you're always going to be transformed in that material material consciousness. You're going to dwell within that. Right? But we're not this. You know, this body. We're supposed to be connected to that, which means Krishna, the Supreme. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So when it says you are that, means Brahman, not the body. Right? Yeah. No other entity can be properly ascertained as separate from him, the Supreme Soul, who nonetheless is distinct from everything and everyone else. Right? Everybody's part of Krishna, but at the same time, Krishna is different. That which did not exist in the past and will not exist in the future also has no existence of its own for the period of its duration, but is only a superficial designation. Right? Before there's no creation, it's all Krishna. Then he creates everything, which is Krishna. And then he winds it back up into himself, which is Krishna. So, you know, before it happens and after it finishes, then we'll know it doesn't exist. But during the interim, that maintenance point, what's there manifest is still Krishna. So that potency that something is there, it's still Krishna. Therefore, the names are names of Krishna. And therefore, you're dealing with Krishna. How would you deal with it in devotional service? It's Krishna. How would you deal with it to serve Krishna? Mm-hmm. Right? Like if you're in the Ganga and you're using Ganga water to worship the Ganga, how do you do this? Mm-hmm. Right? You have the proper attitude. You know it's Ganga water. You know you're in the Ganga. You know you're using Ganga water to worship the Ganga. So the attitude that's there. But if we think the material energy is separate from Krishna, no, material energy is Krishna, it's his potencies. The various individual things we're using as mediums, according to scripture, to engage in Krishna's service. And for what? To please Krishna. It's the same thing. Does that make sense? Okay? Yeah? Okay.
So then there is no duality.
There's no duality. Yeah. Whatever is created and revealed by something else is ultimately only that other thing. Right? So it's created by Krishna, revealed by Krishna, that means it's non-different from Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Lord alone exists before the creation of this universe and after its destruction and during its maintenance. He's the only one that's always there. Although thus not existing in reality, this manifestation of transformations created from the mode of passion appears real because the self-manifested, self-luminous, absolute truth exhibits himself in the form of the material variety of the senses, the sense objects, the mind, and the elements of physical nature. Because Krishna manifests himself as these through his energies. Right? Therefore, that's why it appears to be real. Because it's Krishna. But the point is, we call it illusion because we think it's not Krishna. That's the illusion.
Yes. So, going from our side.
Yeah, the illusion's from our side. Krishna's not an illusion. Maya's not an illusion. Mm-hmm. She's doing her service to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thus, clearly understanding by discriminating logic the unique position of the absolute truth, one should expertly refute one's misidentification with matter and cut to pieces all doubts about the identity of the self. Becoming satisfied in the soul's natural ecstasy, right? Because in Ananda, that's the position that's there. One should desist from all lusty engagements of the material senses, right? Because that's not the natural happiness of the living entity. Because lust is the perversion of what should be turned into prema. So it's a different path. So it's not the natural position. Nevertheless, until by firmly practicing devotional service to me, one is completely eliminated from his mind all contamination of material passion, one must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes, which are produced by my illusory energy. So until one is completely free that these don't even come up. Point is, if it's coming up in your mind, be careful. If it's not coming up in your mind, you don't worry about it. Right? The point is, it's coming up, you have to be careful, because all these things that come from passion, they can create passion. That's the point. Passion means desire. Right? So lust means desire for something other than Krishna. So that's the whole point. So when all we see is things connected to Krishna, the desire to please Krishna, then one's beyond passion. Right? So, make sense? Yeah. Okay. One must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes which are produced by my illusory energy. So it's still under Krishna control. The yogi who has taken shelter of me remains free from hankering because he experiences the happiness of the soul within. Right? There's nothing, you're looking for something, so we look in the external. But if we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, what's to look for in the external? Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you already have what you would be looking
yeah.
for.
You know, you have some nice food that you like, or you have a piece of, you know, dry dirt. Food you like, dry dirt. Food you like, you know, work it out. Thus, while executing this process of yoga, he is never defeated by obstacles. So that point is, as soon as he's always absorbed in Krishna, that yoga, then that defeats all obstacles. All the other ones have obstacles. And they're very difficult to perform. And the results you get are meager. So for the soul, there's nothing there. It's like you're coming along, you know, it's like, let's say, afternoon, spend one of those crazy days, you're starving. Like that. And I say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I go into the kitchen, I bring out this, you know, little plate, and in the middle of the plate, there's half a grain of plain rice. And I go, here, here, I kept this for you.
And it is a goddess.
And it's a goddess. Yes. And it's a goddess. And that's the worst part. You know, and then you tell the whole story. And then they said, only half a grain of rice. That's nothing. It was a goddess. So you can't even eat the half grain of rice. Yeah.
Breakfast with this tomorrow.
Yeah. You can break the person's head with a plate now, but keep the grain of rice for tomorrow, or the half a grain of rice. Okay. Chapter 29, Bhakti Yoga, Pratigya. For him who constantly meditates on Krishna's presence within all persons, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness, along with false ego, are very quickly destroyed. Didn't we just solve all the problems of all the modern social problems right here with this one verse? For him who constantly meditates on Krishna's presence within all persons, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness, along with false ego, are very quickly destroyed. Right? Solves everything. One verse. Chapter 29 summarizes questions and answers. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna question 1134 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 1129.1, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, I fear that the method of yoga described by you is very difficult for one who cannot control his mind. Therefore, please explain to me in simple terms how someone can more easily execute it." Right? So you have the process of yoga, and it has all the technical complications to it. But it will be very difficult. So Uddhava is saying, please explain in simple terms how someone can more easily execute it. So it's the same thing. You're getting it's the same process, but more in a simple way. Right? So isn't that better? You have this really complicated way and a really simple way. Right? You have this wall. You can walk all the way down to the end of the wall and then walk around the wall and then come back. Or you can just go through the door. Yeah, or you can try to climb over and this and that, and yeah, dig a tunnel underneath, yeah, like that.
Or go through the door.
Yeah, you know, go back, get your flying dragon, have him burn the wall to ashes, but the problem is it's the brick wall, it doesn't burn. Yeah, so many problems. You know, so, but all you have to do is go, so it's simpler, it's easier, but that's called bhakti. It's the ultimate yoga system. Sri Krishna answers this question throughout the rest of the chapter, Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 29th chapter, Krishna explains how one attains bhakti by taking shelter of great devotees, and how one can attain liberation by realizing Atma. Sardarta Darshini, 1129.1. Thinking that the previously described spiritual practice based on detachment is too difficult, right? We started with bhakti, then he goes into all the aspects of karma and jnana, now he comes back to bhakti, right? You know? Yeah. So it's like, okay, so how do we do that? And then you explain it all, you get out the Hari Bhakti philosophy. Okay, well, what did Prabhupada say we should do? Yeah, yeah. Like someone came to me the other day, said, hey, I heard that you're giving out this mantra by which people who aren't initiated, you know, can offer food and all that. You know, what is this? What is the system that you have going? You say the Dham mantra to, you know, Prabhupada, the spiritual master, then, you know, to Namo Bhav to Lord Chaitanya, and then Namo Brahmanya to Krishna, and then, you know, Hari Bao, you know, like that. You know, it says everybody uses it. It's not that it's some special secret, you know, things like that. It goes, oh, okay. Yeah.
She wasn't disappointed.
No, it's just like, oh, okay, yeah. Because, but it's somehow or another come down the pipeline that it's some special thing
some
that we're giving. Yeah. Yes, that's wow.
Just
okay.
To confirm.
Huh?
Just to confirm.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so
Maharaj, we say that this is more or less our life. We try karma, we try dhyana, instant talking, go to bhakti after.
Yeah, yeah. Well, don't forget a little Buddhism in between. You know, about, you know, giving it all up and it's all nothing and all useless and all that. And, you know, then, you know, we don't mind a little bit of the useless. And,
yes,
you know,
yes.
Take a little more useless on karma.
Yes.
A side of useless.
Yeah, a little side of useless. Yeah. Okay, so we'll continue this in the evening. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanand.